Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, does Odell Beckham want out of Cleveland? Got something for you to keep your eye on with NFL quarterbacks. And some of you guys are confident enough to tell us stories by the time that you got beat up. But first. All right, so it appears that we have reason to believe that the Patriots might be back on a same old, same old. So what we find out this weekend is, per our Diana Rossini here at ESPN, the Bengals spotted somebody on the sideline who said that he was working for Robert Kraft. He was a videographer, and he said that he was there for the purposes of shooting, a show of sorts for the Patriots. And the Patriots have a show on their website called Do Your Job that involves a lot of people doing fairly mundane jobs around the NFL. But hey, man, it's kind of like the people in the credits. You should maybe stay the whole way so they can get their little props, right? And so the homie Pablo actually watched this, because I wouldn't, and said they got videos of guys like taping ankles and stuff. Real boring things. And so what they say is the guy that was on the sideline, they were there shooting a video about an advanced scout. Yeah, that's what it was. Now, never mind that advanced scouting is typically one of the more secretive things that you have going. I find it very hard to believe that the Patriots would put an advanced scout on their little show or whatever, but that's what they said that they were doing, right? So the guy got hemmed up. The Bengals are like, yo, man, what's going on with you? And he's like, yeah, man, I'm just here shooting this show, but hey, if you want me to delete the footage, I do that right here. No big deal. I can just get rid of the footage right here if that'll make you feel better. You know, we ain't up to no, you know, shenanigans or anything like that. Why would you think that we're up to any shenanigans? I'll just delete it right here. And, you know, one would think that this could be the end of it. The NFL is investigating it. They're looking into it, but they don't really have anything on it right now. The Patriots say that there's zero that was going on, 100%. Nope, not a thing that's going on. But, Gabe, you know what makes this tricky, right? This whole story is exactly what we found out in reports about Spygate that they had told cats that they should do if they ever got caught.
That's what I found most interesting was that, okay, what do you do if you get caught? Tell them that you're filming something for Kraft TV.
Yes.
Kraft TV is the state-run TV for the Patriots.
That's exactly what they're supposed to do, though. Their story is supposed to be to do that. Say that you're filming a TV show. And I have to say this for the Patriots. It would be diabolical brilliance if they were still up to their same old shenanigans. And instead of using the excuse that, oh, we're producing a show, why don't we start actually producing a show? So when they say, yeah, that's what you said the last time, you can be like, yeah, but this time we actually have a show. Like, wouldn't that be that would be some slick trickeration if that's what it was that they were trying to pull. If that was actually what it was that they were trying to do. That would be a brilliant level of trickeration that they were pulling off. This gets us back to something that we've talked about a few times on this show. I always talk about credibility. Credibility like insurance. You don't need insurance till you get in a wreck. You know what I mean? You don't need insurance till you need insurance. And now this is a place where the Patriots don't have any credibility with us. So it seems like they back here on their own shenanigans, with the next level of it being, Gabe, if they out here trying to get the hand signals from the Bengals, like, I feel like that's going a little bit too far in dotting your I's and crossing your T's.
Yeah, they're putting together all the pieces of the puzzle.
They ain't leaving nothing to chance, huh?
No.
Right?
And then it's like you try to catch them in the line, like, no, y'all are tripping.
Right. I guess they are that dedicated to covering the spread, because it can't just be about winning a game if you're doing this with the Bengals. Now, my hypothesis has been that if they were on some shenanigans with this, it would be perhaps looking at the hand signals of the Bengals, and maybe that'll give you an idea of, say, what the Rams might be doing, because Zach Taylor used to work with the Rams, right? You know, used to work with McVay. So maybe that's the level that they were going to. I just feel like if you was out here like spying on the Bengals, this just seemed like a whole waste of Bob Kraft's money. It's got to be something else he could be doing with that cash. He could be giving it to what you call it? Charity. What my man saying? Scarface? Lepers? Black kids? You know, something like that. You could be out there putting that toward the world instead of out here spying on the Bengals. If you're the Bengals, you're like, damn, man, can we not have nothing? Can we not have nothing at all? And I have to admit, I understand that, like, in baseball, you talk about stealing signs and, like, you've been doing it since the beginning of the time and everything else. I understand. But I also feel like the game got to have rules, right? The reason that you got to have these hand signals are because you can't just scream out what the play is, right? We got to come up with something so we can, like, relay what we're doing. We have to have a way to relay these things. Okay, cool. You understand we need a way to relay these things. You ain't got to be so snoopy about this whole situation. Gang gotta recognize the game at some point, and I feel like everybody need to be out here just kind of leaving the signals alone, unless they just putting them all up in your face and it becomes transparently obvious what it is that they doing. Like, I remember I played in Little League, and I think I was 11 at this point, I'm not sure, but you know, when you younger in Little League, ain't nobody out here like really talking about no signs and stuff like that. They kids, they too stupid to keep up with that. So then by the time you do get to the place where people out here throwing out signs, the thing about it is you gotta have a sign simple enough that an 11-year-old can keep up with them, right? And so I'm standing on first base, I'm looking over at the third base coach, he out here doing the signs, and the sign for steal was so easy. It was always the last sign, and the dude would take his hand and start at his elbow and then go toward his fist, right? That would always be the sign. And I'd just stand there and be like, he's stealing. I wasn't trying to steal their signs. Their signs are just directly in my face. I had no other option. These cats in the NFL, they doing all kinds of stuff to try to hide these signs. You got somebody over there with a Dakota ring trying to get to the bottom of it. Come on, man. You know that's not respecting the game. You know you're not respecting the game right now. All that talk you got about the Patriots, everything, how much you love football and everything else, you got to have some small measure of respecting the game. And I feel like respecting the game is probably best demonstrated by not trying to cheat using the Bengals stuff, if that is what you're doing. Like, this isn't the biggest deal in the world. You just look at him and you're like, yo, why would you do such a thing? Like, Gabe, as far as I know, do we have any evidence that there's anybody else that's willing to go this far?
No.
Assuming the Patriots are doing it this time. I don't feel like we have any evidence of anybody else in the game that's out here kicking it like this with the Patriots to the point where you got to get to the bottom of whatever it is that the Cincinnati Bengals are doing.
We have this interesting parallel going on right now with the Houston Astros, though, and all the spying that they're doing, which is kind of weird.
You know, the thing that's interesting about the Astros with it is once they got caught, it became so obvious how sloppy they were, and that's how everybody was able to come back after the fact and see what was going on and watch these plays and then hear the guys, like, what, banging on the wall or whatever it is to let them know what the pitch was that was coming, and then they would go from there. Like, they were real slick in terms of gathering the information, but there was only so far they could go in being slick on relaying the information. So then on the back end, everybody came back. And see, the thing with the Astros, though, where it got wild, did you see the story that Molly Knight did for The Athletic where she caught up with the 9 guys who got sent down or traded after they got rocked by the Astros? You know, some of these guys are just kind of like, yo, how much different would things have been for me? Some of these guys obviously got called back up or whatever it is, but these dudes are out here getting rocked. Like, this was messing with their money. And the point that she makes in the story is that the pay is so much different from being in the majors to being in the minors, where I think these cats in the minors are getting paid like $12,000 a year. And the minimum salary in the majors is $535,000. You see what I'm saying? Like these things matter in that way. Like, it goes beyond just simply, oh, you trying to get a leg up or whatever. You out here really, like, affecting people's lives when you're out here doing stuff like this. And so with the Patriots, I don't know if there's anything as direct as you could have with those cats in those situations, but this is bad news, man. This is not what the game is supposed to be. This is not how people are supposed to be getting down. And so if you find out with the Patriots that they just keep doing this over and over and over again, that they just keep getting caught over and over and over again, are we supposed to look at them differently? Like, is this a thing? Right? Like, how are we supposed to play this? That's my question. I don't even need, like, moral outrage and indignation and what are we supposed to tell the kids and stuff like that. I don't give a damn about the kids. Not in that way. Like, I don't have an answer for that, but you do kind of have to look at them a little different, because the thing with the Patriots is they do always seem to know what somebody's up to before they do it. Right? They always seem to be that one step ahead of everybody else. What if it's all nonsense? All right, what if we are so sure that Bill Belichick is that much smarter than everybody else when in reality he just knows that the plays are coming? Like, what if it's that? Gabe, you got anything on that? Because I'm trying to reckon with it myself.
The first time that all this Spygate stuff came around, that's what everybody was thinking. Everybody else in the NFL looking up at the Patriots and all their championships. And anytime there's a little kind of break in the armor, a little break in the chain where people can think, oh, well, they've been cheating the whole time, then you want to be able to correlate the two, right? The winning and the cheating. So this is not going to go away. It's not going to go away. And for every Patriots hater, which includes me, I am here for it.
It's less about the cheating, if they're cheating, than the dedication to cheating.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Like, I remember when I was in 10th grade, I basically called my 10th grade year 101 ways to cheat on a vocabulary test or whatever the tests were. We had this teacher who was a bit absent-minded, and we just, for sport, like, we were going to be fine on the stuff. So for sport, we just came up with all the different ways to cheat. We were waiting for her to go out the room so that we could put our cheat sheets on the ceiling. You know, like, we were just finding, like, all the new adventurous ways that we could come up with to cheat just because it was fun, right? But that was, like, the gifted class in 10th grade. That's what we expected to be. This the league. Y'all ain't got to be getting down like this. This ain't what it's got to be. No, doesn't have to be that at all, especially to the point of cheating against the Bengals. Come on, man. They trying hard enough as is. Okay, we are in the Odell Beckham drama zone in Cleveland.
Didn't take long, did it?
Did not take long. I'm not sure, though, exactly how much drama that we actually have and how much of this is like legitimately the quote-unquote fault of Odell Beckham. And this is why I say this. We had the report come out, I guess it was in the course of the weekend. Jay Glazer said that Odell Beckham wants out of Cleveland. Gabe, that roster got 53 players on it. How many of them you think want out of Cleveland? Because I think the answer is probably something around 50.
They have been having a tough time.
Yeah, like why would anybody still want to be there? This is the year it was supposed to be good, and they still out here looking fairly sorry. Not completely sorry, but fairly sorry. Okay, and by the way, let the Bengals stay in that game a lot longer than you should if your team itself is not sorry. Like, that's kind of where they are in this situation. So you tell me that Odell Beckham does not want to stay on a team that is below 500 and, you know, plays in a city that most people don't want to live in voluntarily. I understand that a lot of y'all are here from Cleveland, or somebody who doesn't really listen to this show regularly who might be from Cleveland might hear this and get upset. And I understand that y'all in Cleveland love living in Cleveland. No shade to you for living in Cleveland. I'm just telling you, the rest of us ain't really trying to do that. Now, you think about all the people that you know in Cleveland that want to leave, and then think about all the people you know who don't live in Cleveland who want to come there. Not come back, but come there, right? Maybe somebody want to come back and live down the street from Nana again. I got no idea. I'm just telling you, the rest of us, we ain't really trying to live in Cleveland, and I hope you guys are happy as you live in Cleveland, but that ain't at the top of my list. Like, if something happens and you hear Bomani just took a job in Cleveland, please understand, something didn't go the way that I planned it. You know, and who knows, I might get there and I might love it to death by the time I get there. But from here, I'm just letting you know right now, that ain't really nothing I'm trying to do. And that probably wasn't nothing really that Odell Beckham was trying to do. Odell Beckham in Cleveland sounded a lot to me like when O.J. Simpson was in Buffalo. He did a good job of smiling about it while he was there. But the second that season was over, he was like, take me back to the sunshine, homie. And that's what I need. Right? And so, no, I'm not surprised that Odell Beckham would want to be out of there. I'm not surprised by the reports that he's been after games telling people to come get me. That doesn't shock me in the least that he would feel that way. And I do think it's interesting that we received that much differently than we received it last year when we heard about Earl Thomas asking the Cowboys to come get him, right? You know, we understood that. Hey, they didn't extend his contract, da-da-da, everything else. You know, we got where he was coming from, wanting that sort of thing. Beckham's kind of in the same place. Like, I wonder this in the NFL. What percentage of guys want to be on the team that they're on? Like, what percentage of guys, if you gave them the option of going somewhere else, would not want to go somewhere else? Because I would guess that the only guys that are just 100% no, this is the place I want to stay, are starters. Right? 11 guys on both sides. Those guys probably want to stay. I'm saying everybody below them on the depth chart probably thinks they'd be starting if they were playing something else. And the only reason they're not starting now, you know what that reason is, Gabe? Politics. Whenever somebody ain't getting what they want at work, the explanation is politics. That's what they got. Politics. All right. So squad full of guys that want to be out of wherever it is that they happen to be. Okay. So 22 out of 53 guys on a team. Call it 24 because it's the kicker and the punter. Okay. So that means that the other 29 guys would probably rather be playing somewhere else. Is that really crazy? Because I don't think it's crazy. I also feel like for the Browns, this isn't what Odell thought he was signing up for. This isn't what he thought that it was going to be. And by the way, he didn't sign up for it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He didn't exactly sign up for it. He had his like list of teams that he like wanted to play for, which coincidentally are the teams that he's been chatting up in people's ears telling, come get me. the Browns traded for him.
It's not like Dave Gettleman came to him and was like, so Odell, where would you like to go? It's not what happened at all. You know what I mean? Like, no, they just sent him wherever it was they thought was best for him. And to be fair to the Giants, I know that, Odell has seen it as he thought they were sending him somewhere to go die, wither away, basically. But they did send him to a place that looked like an up and comer. They did send him to go play with his homeboy, Jarvis Landry. The Baker Mayfield thing, people were more optimistic about that in his year one than they have been in his year two. All of that stuff is there. But this is going to become a piece of drama for the Browns because it is Odell Beckham, but I don't think it's going to happen because of anything particular with Beckham. Like, I don't think that Beckham is attracting the drama in this situation. He just happens to be a highly compelling figure, so when something comes up about him, we're going to wind up coming up and talking about it. We're going to wind up trying to get to the bottom or whatever it is when it comes to Beckham. Right, like that's what it's going to be, but I don't feel like this is one of those cases where you can look at him making a mess again, because I could understand if he wanted to make a mess about this. I'm out here playing with this damn sports hernia. Ooh, you ever had one of those?
I have not.
I have to admit, man, my dad told me he had a hernia once. He was talking about like having a hernia, and nobody really, like, a hernia doesn't tell you what exactly the injury is. And then I asked him, I was like, so what is it? And then he basically told me that it's like, you know, we're going to keep it like simple. It's like your guts are in your nuts. That doesn't sound pleasant at all.
No, it does not.
Like these cats, these football players be out here doing stuff like that. Like, yeah, I'm just going to play all season through that. What? No, I'm not doing that. So you imagine you out here, you running. You got your guts in your nuts while you out here running on the field. And this dude ain't throwing you the ball. Like, I'm sorry, you are going to need to force feed it to me if I'm out here playing with my guts in my nuts. You're going to need to try hard to get me the ball. I don't care if I'm triple cover. Give me a chance to fight through the pain. Like, whatever it happens to take, I deserve that. I need that. I'm out here playing with my guts in my nuts. Ugh, yikes. Yikes. Now, here's the thing, though, for Beckham. If he wants out, I got bad news for you, buddy. They ain't trading you. Like, unless you're willing to go take this to the crib, you're going to be playing for the Cleveland Browns. And maybe he is willing to take it to the crib. Now, he doesn't strike me as, like, the A.J. Green type that's like, I want to stay here through thick and thin no matter what it is. Like, Bradley Beal is saying that in the NBA. Odell doesn't strike me as that sort of dude. He seems like a guy that would want to go somewhere else, and that's fine. But they're not going to trade you where you want to get traded. Like, he doesn't really have any agency to get himself into a position to go where he wants. All he can do is put himself in a position to go somewhere else. I think it was Charles Robinson at Yahoo that wrote, if he wanted to go to San Francisco, the problem is they don't have the draft capital. They've had the draft capital before. Like, in previous years, they've had the draft capital. They don't have the draft capital anymore. Maybe he wants to go play for New England, and I can see him fitting in just fine. Playing with New England. Do they have what it takes to trade for him? They really need him. They really need him badly. But do we know who's going to play quarterback for the Patriots next year, Gabe? Because I don't think it's going to be Tom Brady.
Yeah, all their good backups have gone to other teams.
Yeah. Like, so what are you going to do? You're kind of stuck there. So he can go there and he could be like, yo, come get me, save me, whatever it is. Ain't nobody going to save you, man. Ain't nobody there to save you. Can't nobody save you. You stuck. This is where you are. So at least as far as I can tell, the best option that dude has is to make the best of it. And that is one of the more demoralizing feelings that you wind up with when people tell you all there is for you to do, deal with it. Make the best of it. That's what you got. But to be fair to Odell, it seems like that's been what he's done, right? What he has done has been to make the best of it. What he has done is just kind of put his head down and try to play football. And then at the end of the game, be like, hey, so, you know, y'all want to trade for me? Anybody? Anybody want to come get me? Anybody at all? And this to me, man, this is the curse of being a wide receiver. You are so dependent upon everything else that goes on around you. So dependent on everything else that goes on around you. And as things stand, has Odell Beckham played a single down with a good NFL quarterback? Like, his rookie year, Eli Manning put up good numbers, but do you think Eli Manning was good? Like, this dude's one of the best wide receivers in the league, maybe one of the best wide receivers we've ever seen. This is 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, his sixth year. Not a single one. I would want to get out of there, too. Too bad, buddy. You're stuck. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about the next wave of NFL quarterbacks. But first, hiring is challenging. But there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, and growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Codable co-founder Gretchen Huebner experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a new game artist to grow with her education tech company. But then she switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference. And you can too by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. And by using ZipRecruiter's screening questions to filter candidates, Gretchen found it easier to focus on the best ones, then find the right one. In fact, after posting her job on ZipRecruiter, Gretchen says she was honestly surprised she found qualified candidates so quickly and hired a new game artist in less than 2 weeks. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. Hey, Gabe, any chance you watched the SEC championship game the other night?
I watched enough of it.
Okay. Were you listening to Gary Danielson during that game act like Joe Burrow just came from outer space?
Yes, I did.
Dude, Gary Danielson was like, it is amazing to watch Joe Burrow redefine what a quarterback looks like. And I wish somebody would have stopped and been like, and what the hell does that mean? Right? Like not even accusatory, just like, what exactly is it that you're talking about here? And when I said that on Twitter, a whole lot of people came back with like all the black quarterbacks. Bruh, I'm not even talking about the black quarterbacks. Like what Joe Burrow is doing is really good. And I think he's going to be the number one pick in the draft. And I've been calling that for weeks, but he's not doing anything that we have never seen before. I also came to find out, Gabe, that they've been out here comparing Joe Burrow to Tom Brady.
I have seen those comparisons.
But my thing is, I don't understand how you compare anybody to Tom Brady. And the reason I don't understand how you compare people to Tom Brady is what makes Tom Brady distinct is simply excellence. Like, there's nothing that I'm going to see a guy do and be like, oh, he looks like Tom Brady, that you can't see anybody else do. That's not to say that Tom Brady isn't great, but what makes Tom Brady great is greatness. So, like, when you see somebody like Michael Vick, there's something really distinct and you've never seen before on that. So when Lamar Jackson comes around, I see how you wind up making that sort of comparison. Or Michael Vick comes around and you compare him to Steve Young, left-handed guys that run around like that. I see what it is that people are talking about. But with Brady, the only way that you can beat Tom Brady is to be, like, really excellent for, like, 15 years in the league. Like, that's all you got. Like, that comparison doesn't hold. And so I'm like, yo, why are people getting so far ahead of themselves when it comes to Joe Burrow? And then I got to looking at the league. So, Gabe, I got something interesting for you to think about. Think about the time period of the NFL from 1998 through 2005. That time period. Let me tell you who came into the NFL during that time period, right? Here are the guys who came into the league at quarterback. And I'm going off the top of my head here. You let me know if I missed anybody. Peyton Manning, Donovan McNabb, Michael Vick, Drew Brees, Carson Palmer. Oh, Tom Brady. Almost forgot about him. Phillip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger, Eli Manning, Alex Smith, and Aaron Rodgers. All right. So that's 11 dudes who all turned out to be, if nothing else, pretty good NFL quarterbacks, right? And if I'm not mistaken, Gabe, every single one of those guys that I named played in a conference championship game at one point. Every single one. That's a pretty like golden era for quarterbacks coming into the NFL. And that is a period of 8 drafts that we have. Now let's take a look at the NFL from 2006. Through, call it 2010. How many, like, good quarterbacks came in the league during that time period? Like, legitimately good quarterbacks. That 2006 draft had Vince Young, Matt Leinart, and Jay Cutler, right? I guess you could maybe say Jay Cutler is kind of good, but that don't really count, right? That's the 2006 draft. Not so much. 2007 NFL draft. Gabe, can you think of anybody? I can't think of anybody that came in the league in that 2007 draft that was worth talking about at quarterback. That was the Jamarcus Russell draft, after all. 2008, you got Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco. Those were your guys coming out of that draft. 2009, you got Matt Stafford. 2010, you got Sam Bradford, right? And hey, guys, I don't think I'm missing anybody here. Like, I think I just gave you who all the quarterbacks were that came into the league in that time period. All right there. That's what I think we've got here. Okay. Now, here's why I bring that up. That 04 class, it's possible that none of those dudes will be in the league next year. Roethlisberger, Eli Manning, and Phillip Rivers. It's possible that we're not going to see any of those guys be starters next year. We already got whispers about them trying to bench Phillip Rivers. You saw Eli Manning. And man, Roethlisberger looks like he's cooked. So even if he's back, is he going to be any good? We don't really have a great answer on that one. Tom Brady, if I had to guess, Tom Brady is not going to be at the very least the starter for the New England Patriots next year. I don't see that happening. How much time left do we have with Drew Brees? I don't think we have very much. Carson Palmer just went out the door not that long ago. I'm bringing all these dudes up just to say we are about to lose a lot. I repeat, a lot of really, really, really good quarterbacks that we've had throughout time. Not just quarterbacks who were good, but quarterbacks that the promotion of the NFL has rested on. Right? They've built promotion around Drew Brees. They've built promotion about Roethlisberger. Like these big name quarterbacks like that, yo, we're about to push a whole wave of them out of the league at one time. And the next generation, who is it? Right? Like, where are your great middle age quarterbacks? You don't really have them as far as I can tell. Alex Smith is done. I think it's fair to say. I wish him the best. I understand he's rehabbing. He ain't got nothing else to do. Aaron Rodgers, you know, he's even starting to talk about like the end is near. But for a whole like 5-year period there, you've had some good quarterbacks. But other than Aaron Rodgers, Gabe, has any of them been great?
No.
Like Matt Ryan had that great season, but I don't think you'd argue that Matt Ryan has been great. I don't think you'd argue Joe Flacco, Super Bowl notwithstanding, has been great. You wouldn't say it about Matt Stafford. You wouldn't say that he's been great. You certainly wouldn't say that Sam Bradford has been great. You get to the 2011 draft, Cam Newton, and the word greatness gets to be tricky because I can make an argument that is great, but you could also make an argument that Matt Ryan has been a better performer, though I think that most of us would take Cam Newton over Matt Ryan. But the other quarterbacks that went in the first round of that draft were Blaine Gabbert, Christian Ponder, and Jake Locker. The 2012 draft, it gave us Andrew Luck, who was on the way to being great before he decided he didn't want to play anymore. Robert Griffin, you've seen what's going on with that. Ryan Tannehill apparently just woke up and decided, I'm going to play great. I don't know if he's necessarily good. But you've got this big gap in quarterbacks between like 2005 and when this thing really starts picking up, which I would say is really 2017. Because the 2014 draft is Teddy Bridgewater, Johnny Manziel, and Blake Bortles. The 2013 draft, oh goodness, that was like the best quarterback out of that one was Geno Smith. Like E.J. Manuel was the only first round pick that was taken in that draft. 2015, Winston and Mariota. I don't think we got anybody that was really killing it out of that. I know we got Jimmy Garoppolo somewhere in that stretch, but I mean, come on, we're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo. 2017 is when he gets cracking. Yeah, Mitch Trubisky, we'll see how that goes, but that's where you get Watson. That's when you get Mahomes. 2018, that's where you get Lamar Jackson. I think we're still up in the air on the rest of those guys, and to a degree, we're up in the air about Lamar Jackson, if we're going to be honest about it. But do you hear what I'm saying is going on here? We've got a really big age gap in what good quarterbacking is. Oh, Kirk Cousins, he came in 2012. Like, the 2012 draft, of the guys who were left from the 2012 draft, the best performer right now in the league is probably Kirk Cousins. Oh, and Russell Wilson. Sorry, Russell Wilson won. We got that guy. My point simply is that this league has built itself around quarterbacks for a very, very long time. It's about to have to build itself around different quarterbacks now. And it's going to have to build itself now around younger quarterbacks, right? That Sunday night matchup is going to start looking a lot different than it used to. We're now going to get the Watson-Mahomes matchups on Sunday night. We're now going to get Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. We're going to get those kinds of games on Sunday night. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be elevated into that class because they have to. They just don't have enough quarterbacks. They don't. But what it looks like to be a top-notch NFL quarterback is a lot different now than it was before. And from here on out, the next wave of quarterbacks, man, it's going to be dudes who can throw, but it's going to be dudes who can move. Like, we are in the middle of the paradigm shift right now, and we are about to watch the previous paradigm basically all get pushed out of here around the same time. Everything about the NFL is going to have to look different because everything is centered around the quarterback. All the discussions that you hear are going to have to change because of the ways that the quarterbacks themselves have changed. The new era, I really think, is going to start in 2020. And I am looking forward to seeing how the NFL goes about pushing this, how the NFL goes about promoting these guys, what their strategies are going to be. Because you ain't going to have many quarterbacks left that can do Wrangler commercials. You're not. Although, wouldn't it be funny if, like, Lamar Jackson did a Wrangler commercial? Lamar Jackson and Lil Nas X doing a Wrangler commercial?
Did you see Lamar Jackson rocking the white sleeves in the game?
I did. I can't tell whether that was on purpose or not.
That could be a serious troll.
Yeah, I can't tell. I have no idea, right? Like, I've seen people, and I can see why you would assume it was. I have no idea if it was the case. The thing that made it tricky was he wasn't so good in the first half, and then the second half, he didn't have the sleeves on, and he was balling. And that dude in San Francisco, like, see, I told you. I also told you that Christian Ponder should have started over Colin Kaepernick in 2016. Pure coincidence that those two things come from the same man. Totally. 100%. But now, man, it's a new day. It's a new era. And I'm looking forward to it.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from Health.
This is Sherry Rudofsky with the Indianapolis Star. When Gen Xers were young in the 70s, about 20% of children in the United States need glasses. Now that number is getting closer to 40 or even 45%, experts say. Some believe that by 2050, as much as a quarter of the world may be nearsighted. Experts also report that children who need lenses see their vision deteriorate faster and faster. So the question remains, what's behind this? Screens are a likely culprit, but experts think it may just be a little bit more complicated than that. They think actually that exposure to sunshine could be just as important, if not more, than how much screen use a child engages in. Again, they don't know exactly why, but they think that natural sunlight stabilizes a child's vision, regardless of how much he or she is using screens. Then, of course, there's the fact that when a child is outside playing, that is time that he or she is not bent over a screen, which makes outdoor time even more important, experts say. Studies also suggest that exposing the eye to a spectrum of light can prevent the development and progression of myopia. But again, experts aren't exactly clear on why that may be.
So basically, we're making our kids blind by keeping them inside?
When I originally read the headline for this story, I thought that it was all down to the screen time. But the fact that it's accompanied with kids just being inside more and being on the computer, playing video games, what have you, and not going outside and playing, that's a different layer to it that's pretty interesting.
Yo, this is so wild, man. And again, like, one thing the millennials always say is that people blame the millennials for, like, being who they are, and then they're like, yo, you're the ones who made us this way, which I think there is a, like, strong and compelling argument. And now they got to say, now y'all out here making us blind.
Well, the funny part about it is, too, and maybe it's not so funny, but I think it's funny, that a lot of people get glasses just to get glasses. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, some people think of it as more of like a fashion statement than anything else. So they'll get glasses even if it's like not really that bad.
Right.
But now it's like, y'all gotta actually get glasses. That is kind of accompanied with the rise of Warby Parker, too.
Yes.
That, like, eyeglass frame company where they'll send your frames to your house, and they're making them all trendy and cheap and stuff. And I was like, everybody wants glasses, but everybody needs glasses. Pretty soon it's not going to be cool to be wearing glasses.
Exactly.
All right, Bomani, this next story comes from Tech.
Hi, I'm Sarah Hagee, and I'm a writer based in Toronto. And for Vice, I wrote an article titled Scams Are Killing the Phone Call. It's essentially about how, at least in North America, almost every call from an unknown number seems to be some type of spam phone call, and how that's changing people's phone habits to the point where phones aren't really used as phones anymore. I'm sure many people can relate to getting, you know, upwards of like 6 calls a day that seem to be whatever type of scam or robocall. And, you know, I spoke with a bunch of people who mentioned that now they kind of hardly pick up their phone anymore. And in turn, they're missing out on quite a lot. So some people are missing important calls from doctors or family members, or they hear their phone ringing and they see it's from this area code and they're like, oh my God, did something happen to my mom? It's a really frustrating thing. And it seems like there's really kind of no way to stop this, at least from our end. You know, all we can do as consumers is to turn our phones on airplane mode or block calls from unknown numbers, which isn't really a solution at all. A lot of these calls are coming from voice over IP. So people are calling from the internet from, you know, God knows what country, and it's not like, you know, we can go and arrest them. Most recently, though, U.S. Congress passed a bill that will fine robocallers up to $20,000 for each time they make calls using unauthenticated numbers. But really, to me, it's just kind of the most 2019 thing that there's this issue that should be quite easy to solve, but we're all just kind of resigned to the fact that this is how things are now. It's kind of insane.
So is the robocall killing the phone, or is caller ID killing the phone? Because there was a time where people just, if the phone rang, they just answered, right? Like the thing about the robocall is this. When you pick up a robocall and you hang up on that robocall, it's not the worst thing in the world, right? Like the inconvenience, not what you want. But before caller ID, we dealt with telemarketers and everything else, and we just took the call. Then we went on about our business. Now, we do not want to pick up the phone unless we know exactly who the person is who is calling us. And I think that says a lot less about the robocalls than it does about us.
You know, it's an interesting, too, I just thought of, with answering the door. People used to just answer the door for anybody, and people were happy that people were coming knocking on the door like, oh, I wonder who that could be.
Yes.
And now it's like, if someone's knocking on my door, I'm like, who the hell is that?
Yeah. No. We are just generally more afraid. What it all comes down to me is just, if we're not comfortable, like we are just different in that way. Like part of that, like people not going outside, people always need to know exactly where their kids are, give them a cell phone so I can check. People somehow manage to raise kids without all this stuff before, right? Like we need to eliminate in our lives all the uncertainty, even just somebody calling you on the telephone.
All right. This last story comes from the environment.
Hey, this is Nate Hedgie with the Mountain West News Bureau. I just did this story for NPR following a bitter debate going on in the plains of Montana. It's about land, as things often are in the West. But this debate is especially contentious. It's got ranchers fighting with hunters and tribes siding with some of the richest people in the world. It's even got conspiracy theories floating around, like the United Nations is trying to wipe everyone out of the Great Plains to create a giant wildlife reserve. Obviously, that's not happening. But here's what is. An ex-Silicon Valley entrepreneur is trying to build a new kind of national park there. It's free to the public, open to hunting, and privately funded by both small donors and some really, really rich people. Once it's complete, it'll be twice the size of Yellowstone. It's called American Prairie Reserve. They're building it by purchasing ranches, phasing out the cattle, and helping return all of the animals that used to live in the Great Plains before white settlers arrived. Wolves, grizzly bears, thousands of wild bison. Many local ranchers hate the idea. They feel like they're being drummed out of the land they've lived on for generations. Here's rancher Connie French.
For them to be successful in their goals, to meet their goals, we can't be here. And that's not okay with us.
She's rooted in this very American and Christian notion of stewardship, taking care of the land while at the same time sustainably producing food from it. And they don't want to see this pocket of cattle country become this big wildlife reserve. But the indigenous people that were there before the ranchers, the Ani and the Nakota, they like the idea. They say by returning thousands of wild bison to the Great Plains, American Prairie is helping restore a crucial part of their culture, one that was wiped away when white settlers and the U.S. government nearly exterminated bison more than a century ago. Here's Nakota tribal member Kenneth Tuffy Helgeson.
The buffalo to the Indian is a symbol of God. And when they tried to eradicate the Indian, they knew if they took away our main food source, our main symbol of God, that we would be rendered to literally nothing.
But now that symbol of God is coming back in a big way.
Gabe, I'm not sure what I want to think about this or what I should think about this, because I'm, you know, protect the animals, I'm good with that. But I also understand the people being like, but yo, this is what we do.
This is a really, really interesting story. I guess I hadn't thought too much about the privatization of national parks and the privatization of wildlife. You see a lot of it with like preserves where they're trying to capitalize off of the animal tourism, which we've talked about briefly, right? And if you haven't heard before, where it's like they're setting up different little safari trips and stuff like that.
Yeah, I gotta say, the only people whose intentions in this that I trust are the people who can't talk, the animals. I'm skeptical of hell at everybody else. And I admit, when they like say the cowboy, I'm like, the cowboy care about saving me? Because I'm not sure he is.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. So the inspiration for this week's voicemail stories came from some sort of discussion you had on Twitter. Would you like to elaborate?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember how exactly it came up, but it dawned on me that the best stories that people have about fighting are stories where they got beat up in the fight, and that it takes a special confident person to admit that you got beaten up in a fight. Chances are your one loss record is very strong if you'd be willing to do that. And so I figured some of y'all have funny stories about the time y'all got beat up.
Some people had different takes on what constituted an L, whether that was actually got in a fight or there was something else. I picked the stories that were about a fight because that was the general idea behind the segment. So our first comes from Knock in Virginia.
Yeah, man, I'm about 6'8", about 270 pounds. So I've never took an L up to this point. You know, I've fought through many times. I've caught an L. It's been 3-on-1, 4-on-1. So, hey, I can handle myself. So I'm at this bar one time, right? And I'm conversating with this young lady. You know, we sitting there talking, and this dude walks up. Dude had to be about 5'9", about 160 pounds. And I was like, man, come on, man. What you doing? He came push on me. He said, what are you messing with my girl for? Why are you messing with my girl? I said, bro, she's conversating. I got nothing to do with that being your lady. So he pushed up on me. I kind of push him back. Then all of a sudden, I see his hand, and then lights. And I drop to my knees, and all of a sudden, I didn't know what happened. And it's so like I'm holding my throat. I felt like I couldn't breathe or nothing. So my boy told me after, he said, look, man, I don't know what dude hit you with. It's like he had like the old karate snake technique and put back his fingers like a snake and struck you dead in the throat. I was like, bruh, I ain't never got hit with the high yaw before. Remember you said people get hit with the high yaw? I got hit with the high yaw, man. That was white stuff.
Yo, and it sounded like he didn't even know the fight had started.
If he thinks you were, you probably were.
You know, well, I mean, the question is whether it was not his, whether it was actually his lady or not, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But the thing about it is, man, that's kind of unfair, man. He didn't even know it was a fight. And I guess if you 5'9", and you fighting 6'9", you got to swing first.
You can't be underestimating those short guys. Got another high.
Oh yeah, it's past not underestimating. No, the short guy has to understand, man. I got to throw this punch first. Like a dude told me a story about a time he got beat up in football practice, and his response was, "I decided right then I was never gonna get hit first again."
These last two guys didn't leave their names, but they're both good stories. Here's the first.
Thanksgiving 2009, we was at pre-party. You know how you go out before Thanksgiving? We had this popular club called the Bogey. It is packed. I mean, it is super packed, wall to wall, people all over the place. I'm walking through the crowd. This white boy behind me keeps pushing me, stepping on the back of my feet. So naturally, I give him a pass the first couple of times. I'm like, oh, this dude is drunk. He's wet. Like, I'm just gonna let him rock. As I'm walking, he steps on my feet again. I turn around. I'm like, listen, homeboy, don't step on my feet again. It's gonna be me and you. I keep walking forward. He steps on my feet again. I turn around. I ball up my fist. I go to jump at it. This sucker hit me with a two-piece. I ain't never felt a day in my life. He knocked it. As soon as he hit me, I seen stars. And he just started to want me. I'm thinking to myself, oh, my goodness, where are my boys at? They don't see me by now getting my ass whooped over here. Before you knew it, I was on the ground when I'm telling them, okay, that's enough, that's enough, that's enough. Needless to say, I got an ass whooping out of this world. And you never judge a book by its cover, I'll tell you that. This little white boy didn't look like he could hurt a fly. He damn near had me crying to my mom at the end of the night.
Yo, that's enough. That's enough. That's enough. That's just defeat, man. Like, my homeboy tells a story about getting beat up in elementary school where he had been picking on this kid. He thought he had him. He turned his back to him. The kid whooped him. But he was like, man, it was all good until, man, I just had to curl up and just hope it was over.
Can't be stepping on a man's shoes now.
Nah, man. I mean, it sounds like he had a fair point. It also sounded like that white dude that told somebody else was like, yo, watch what's about to happen. Watch what's going to happen.
All right, here's the last one here.
Yo, what's up, Bo? First time, long time. In middle school, I was a young pup. We were playing 21, and I was upset that I didn't get the ball. So, you know, me and one of the big eighth graders, his name was Kenny, never forget him. I had went and stole the ball from him, and I was just elbowing in the paint. You know, I was watching maybe Patrick Ewing or something like that. And so here it is. I bowled him, and then I took the ball from him. You know, he was like, hey, yo, chill out, young bug. It ain't that serious or whatever. Yeah, I'm playing 21. I'm thinking I'm Michael Jordan or whatever. So it was that serious for me. So after I, you know, took the ball, got my point or whatever, Kenny rolled up on me. I punched him in the stomach, you know, like a couple times, gave him like all my little sixth grade fists, you know what I'm saying, could handle. Next thing I know, I'm walking away, and I thought Kenny was on the ground or whatever. Here it is. I turned back around. I saw a fist fly to my face. Boom, knocked out. Next thing I know, I'm in the hospital. But yeah, it was pretty bad.
You can't just leave it there, Kenny. Well, he wasn't Kenny. I don't know why I made his name Kenny.
And it was that serious to him.
Yes, it was that serious to him. And then it got more serious than he realized. Next thing I know, I'm in the hospital. Well, the best part about that to me, though, is the Jason Voorhees quality of it. Where he walked away thinking that dude wasn't there. The next thing you know, he was right behind you. Waiting on you. Yikes.
Some good stories coming out of that.
Hey, man, I appreciate the people. They came through for us. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. Also, thanks to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Sherry Radovsky of the Indianapolis Star. Check out her story on how nearsightedness is becoming a problem with the youth. Also, thanks to Sarah Hagee of Vice. Check out her story on how the robocall epidemic has stopped people from answering their phones. And thanks to Nate Hedgie of KUER in Utah. Check out his story on a new privately funded park and how that's changing up the national park game. Also, be sure to check out the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, her dog. This week, Mina chats with the homie Dominique Foxworth about week 15. Be sure to download, subscribe to the Mina Kimes Show. Also, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.